Hello, welcome back to Sessions G. Today is episode 6, and we are back with another intuitive session. We've got an amazing guest with us today. I was just telling him that I am in quite the Zen state, and so you might be hearing that in my voice. Nonetheless, I am feeling grateful. I'm feeling joy. I'm feeling peace. I'm feeling lots of things, but with a very Zen quality. Anyway, I'm going to let our guest today introduce himself. Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me on here. Really happy to hear how you're doing. That Zen gratitude and excitement right before we hit record, we were talking about how that was a lovely trinity of being. So yeah, my name is Sidian Om Finitri, and I was invited on here by Gabriella because she connects with my poetry and appreciates it a lot. So I was called to reach out to me and have a podcast, and we decided to do one of the intuitive sessions just to see what flows.
Awesome. So beautiful. So good to have you. I was just reading through your poetry, and there's one, if you're okay with it, I'd love to read it. It's so beautiful. I mean, they're all beautiful, but
sure,
this
yeah.
one particularly, I feel I want to read now. Okay. How do you tell the truth that cannot be spoken? It is a mystery, but for the dance of turning and returning, always towards the truth. As it is revealed from within us by the call to honesty, authenticity, intimacy, given and received from the essence within everyone and everything. Yet firstly, ourselves. Be honest with yourself in front of all others. Listen with the eye and the heart to see and feel the beautiful music of the spirit. And to by this be taught the way deeper into the wisdom of love. To thus come to know the greatest pleasure of falling in love with and honoring the sacred within all in the spirit of reverent play, life as ceremony, life as celebration, like the loving wonder of a child at the discovering of a brilliant melody and letting it carry you home into the mystery of your innermost being. Relax into alignment with being true to yourself. To appreciate the striving for truth, for authenticity, that all are called to from the deepest secret chamber in our heart of hearts. The call is to be open, to listen and hear the one sound in all, to know the honest, authentic, and intimate presence that lives within all that surrounds, is to speak the simple truth in being all that you are, like water or a crystal, or a mirror that knows no bounds. Open the eye and the heart. See yourself in its mirrored surface. Step through into this moment as the light of truth, the awakened mystery. I mean, that is just so beautiful. So beautiful.
Made me very happy hearing it read.
It was just so beautiful. It makes me happy to read your poetry, your creative energy expressed into this form is to me it feels so close or pointing at the truth and the authenticity of that. It's such a beautiful reflection of the truth that cannot be spoken, and I love it. I absolutely love it. Thank you for what you do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm grateful. I'm grateful to do what I do and to be received. Thank you for reading that. I felt like I was receiving it, you know, like the experience of hearing it and not writing it is different. And there were moments where you were reading parts of it and I was just like really receiving it as if it was for me in a different way than perhaps when I'm giving it, when I read it. And yeah, that writing that one, I started with that question, you know, like, how do you tell the truth that cannot be spoken? Because at first I heard that phrase within me, tell the truth that cannot be spoken. And so then naturally next comes the question. And how I write is I feel the, I guess, the energetic quality of the space that that question, for example, presents or opens up. And I feel, you know, through sensitivity, what energy matches into that. And then what are the words that that energy is translated into? And then what is, what naturally resonates with those words? And I just follow the thread of that energy. And that's how I learn through the process of writing, because the energy is like, it naturally follows the flow of like the Tao or the way. And it's of an intelligence that is beyond the mind. And so it, if it is perceived and you follow it, it will reveal truth, because it speaks in a truth that cannot lie. So when I write like this, I'm learning about the things that I'm writing about. It's revelatory.
Yeah.
Often. Yeah.
I bet. So is this something you've been doing for a very long time? And not necessarily the writing, but the feeling into the energetic sort of signature or impression of something, or the quality of the energy. Is that something you've always done in your life, or is that something that sort of happened along the way?
I mean, I would primarily identify it as something that at least began to come into fruition around the time in my life over the last 6 years, when I began to really integrate and like reduce the complexities in my mind into simplicity. So coming back to that foundation, being able to bring vast concepts down into simplicity and simple language and logic that could be expressed simply to another. So in doing that, I was coming, it was like grounding, right? Grounding this expansive understanding into language that could be spoken simply to another, but also like embodying it, like rather than just conceptualizing it, actually knowing it within you, like, so that that understanding is alive within you rather than just something that you project or have like a pretense around.
Yeah, it's kind of like for me, like the way I see it, it's kind of like engaging in the active process of that intelligence expressing into this human form, like participating in that process actively. Like that process was already happening. That's how we're here. But to engage with that and to be an active participant, both in awareness and with our active attention and our focus, that's when it starts to feel creative, and that's when it becomes an embodied experience of those concepts. It's a really cool thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It reminds me of how I've characterized like the two primary phases of the journey of our, I guess, evolution through this life. And it's, you could look at it like there's an unconscious phase and a conscious phase. And in the beginning phase of our life, we go through the steps of the journey from a foundation of unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be consciousness imbued within it in certain ways, but primarily our foundation is of having not yet come to know the truths or the wisdoms, which we will come to know through the natural processes of creation and destruction that mm-hmm. we undergo. And, you know, through having the necessary deaths and subsequent rebirths that come from ourselves having been created more so by life and life circumstances, because we have a foundation of unconsciousness, we're not consciously engaging with that creative process, and so it's more so just happening to us.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's not imbued with the consciousness of what we are in the way that it can be, then the things that we become built by naturally, or the things that comprise what we become, naturally become destroyed because mm-hmm. they're not in integrity or in alignment with the wisdom of our deeper or true consciousness.
Right.
So that destruction inevitably brings about a rebirth. And then from that space in between the death and the rebirth, we come into awareness of our eternity. We come just all the different ways that we've become wiser through the challenges that we face. And then having that as our foundation, we essentially begin the journey again, but now from a foundation of consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And we will find ourselves to relive all that we had done before. Not that we repeat the same acts, but that the energy of what wanted to be expressed through a certain phase of our life or a certain act or outcome, such as, for example, with addiction. Like, let's mm-hmm. say in the unconscious phase of our life, the energy that wanted to move through us and was not able to be directed consciously manifest as addiction. But then mm-hmm. in the conscious phase of our life, when we come to understand that energy and what it wants to become or what it is in essence, we might find it for ourselves to be like the energy of passion. And that because we didn't know ourselves, we didn't know what we wanted to create, what we loved truly, that passion could not be directed in a healthy way. So it was directed in seeking false senses of fulfillment rather than mm-hmm. through creating the art that is the natural expression of our soul that could fill us with that same love and desire and joy for creating. So with the second phase of like the conscious, from a foundation of consciousness, that's what I mean by like we relive the experiences. It's like it's almost like we redeem the things of the past.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. I totally get that. I love the way, so just to go back what you said earlier about reducing the complexities in your mind to simplistic, like that, in a way that's like if we take the example of the addiction, that would have been or is, you know, for the most part, a very complex experience. There's a very complex web of different things involved in expressing that energy into like addictive patterns or addictive relationships with things. And so reducing that complexity to something simple, like perhaps the, you know, the energy is seeking to express itself through a natural and authentic desire or passion, and that's all there is to it. And if it is not consciously directed and consciously tended to, then it will go and express itself into all of these other complex things.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And the reduction to simplicity through like grounding into being, basically. Like if we look at the expanse of consciousness, it could be like this array of complexity. And then there's the simplicity of just being. You bring mm-hmm. that in. It's like that's a metaphor for the same process that happens within the experience of a certain, I guess, less desirable manifestation of the energy that flows through us, like addiction, coming to really understand it in essence. That's a part of the healing process. It for me it was healing. I had a pretty intense experience with addiction, and at first I had to create a separation from myself and it by forming different judgments around it so that I could potentiate that separation and really center myself in a place that was establishing this new foundation as separate from it. And so it had to be like an enemy in a sense. Mm-hmm. But a part of my healing process was to remember the original innocence that that it is and that it wants to remember itself to be as well. So that was healing in a really deep sense for me. Mm-hmm. And is still, I'm still moving through that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so beautiful. You know, for me, I've had many meditations where, and I remember that when you said bringing it all in and just being in many of my meditations on my journey, I've sort of treated everything in my mind and all of the various experiences that I feel are experiences that I'm having as separate entities that exist within myself. And then I sort of just called them home, each one by one. I would spend, you know, several meditations just calling them home and saying, hey, come home, welcome home. And, you know, thank you for coming home. And just that process of welcoming everything back to the here and now, for me, really, it allowed me to develop a relationship with that original innocence of all things, especially all the things that I experience within my mind and that I, you know, often resist or find challenging or problematic. So it allowed me to deepen that relationship, and it also liberated me from the consequences of viewing all these things as, wrong or bad or not in my favor. Mm-hmm. When really the truth at its core, it is all in my favor, and that's one of the things that I came to realize is that. Literally every single component from that unconscious foundation part of the journey to now, it was all orchestrated by design to allow for consciousness to arise. So the consciousness that is arising within me, that is made possible by all everything that sort of orchestrated the way for that to happen. So it's all like in a way it's all perfection, and it one of the things that you've written about is the completion It is all completed, and this is, you know, in some ways, sometimes life is an experience of the act of completing to completion. But even in that, the completion has already occurred, and it's a beautiful thing. But I wanted to go back for a second because you started talking about your experiences with addiction, and I find that for me, what I've generally found to be a struggle is in trying to convey this experience of you know, remembering the original innocence, and remembering that it is like there is a very simple perspective on things and a simplistic relation of being between the energy that is aware and the energy that, for example, manifests as addiction. But trying to explain that concept in trying to help people that are dealing with addiction, I find that a bit of a struggle. And I think that it is a difficult thing to express, and really anyone, you know, dealing or struggling with something like addiction, is on their own path and on their own journey, and they will come to understand it within their consciousness, or they will arrive at that awareness, when they do. And that's just their journey. So I'd love to hear your thoughts around, what is that like for you? Do you try and, or have you tried to help people that are maybe in a place where you have been before? And what is that process like? Do you find that easy? Do you find that challenging? You know, because I can think of people that struggle with addiction, and I would love to be able to say, here, you know, wave a flag around and say, look, here's a mirror, I'm holding it up for you. And, you know, the answer's there. It's simple. You know, it's so beautiful and simple. And, but that's not, it's not that easy. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
All right. Yeah, thanks for the question. It's a really good one. I was thinking of the metaphor of the seed in the earth, and how it breaks open within the dark to begin to grow deeper into the dark, you know, like laying its foundation there, but also growing towards the light at the same time. And not until it reaches through the surface does it begin to see the light. Before then, it only senses it, knows it in this place within it. And so I was looking at the metaphor as between or from the above and the below is like that threshold between consciousness and unconsciousness. And not until you reach that place into the light of consciousness, are you truly able to see, you know, for example, the addiction for what it is. But you have a sense of it, and I think of like the gardener, right? So in this metaphor, ourselves trying to help the person who's suffering from addiction, we would be in the role of the gardener. And you can only do so much with a plant, and the rest you just have to let it grow. And as much as you could do, it's nowhere near the intelligence of nature itself to support that plant to thrive and grow. And so there has to be a certain amount of allowing it to happen. but also allowing, and this is, I guess, an interesting question, ourselves to do what we feel is best, because we ourselves are also an extension of that, or an expression of that intelligence of nature. Although we might act in error, I think this also comes to the question of like how to live in alignment with the way of nature. And we spoke of that in like your poem, spoke of it, or the poem that you read of mine. Yeah, and then these understandings, like I was sharing about, addiction being misdirected passion, for example, or you could just call it passion. That's a certain quality of understanding that is like a light that, you know, we can bring that to the person suffering from addiction. And maybe that's a key for them. It certainly can be.
I think you answered the question beautifully. I totally understand what you're saying. Your answer is a gentle reminder of, trusting the intelligence and the natural course of things, whether that's the natural course of the seed under the ground, or everything around it, as well as the natural course of ourselves, and our own growth, and trusting that, and that by aligning ourselves, actively and persistently with that as best as we can, as much as we can, we minimize, our own expressions or our actions, not being in alignment with everything else around us. It's a nice reminder of trusting that process, the natural course, and focusing on what we need to do in order to align ourselves, and focusing on what we have to do, letting the rest be.
Right. Yeah. And this is in a sense an echo of what you were speaking about when you said that you would call all the aspects of yourself to return into union with you. And I think one of the most healthy and effective ways that we can work with the external world is by relating to it as an internal reflection as well. A reflection of the internal, and even beyond the idea of whether or not that's the case, it's an effective philosophy. And so a good philosophy is one that works and is effective, and that's what I've heard. And it seems to be the case. So recognizing that this is an aspect of yourself, that the other is a reflection of that, and if you can make peace with it, and then you can through that peace be able to speak openly to it and speak honestly to it and have compassion and understanding for it, then all of that's going to translate into how you interact with that individual. Also the metaphor of the seed and it breaking open. So that's something that needs to happen, right? And that's why this seed is in the dark underground and under the pressure. And it's so nature wants it to break open, essentially. If it doesn't and it gets dug up, then it's not going to grow into all that it could be. And as a gardener, not understanding the process of the plants becoming, we might try to dig that seed up And yeah, I spoke of this once before in another way that like nature wants to see an energy that's building. It wants to see it like come to a fruition and like bloom, basically. So it doesn't want to see that energy like just like dissipate and be like canceled out. So for the addiction, I think that's why everybody, they call it the rock bottom, right? Like when you find your rock bottom, and it's almost like universally true in the stories of addiction that the person finally began to make it out of that through hitting their rock bottom, and only they can know what it is. And they speak about this in the AA and NA meetings. It's a thing, and that would be like the seed breaking open.
And the rock bottom is like the natural way of things is such that there is a kind of like a wall, or like the way in which things are structured, it doesn't allow for that energy to dissipate. If it reaches that sort of that point where it is face to face with dissipation, that's when it actually reaches the, that's when it has actually arrived at the breaking open of the seed. And it's actually like, when you look at it that way, from the perspective of the seed itself, you know, the breaking, when the seed breaks open, it is a death of what it once was. It was a seed, and now it breaks open. So there is a death that occurs. There is an end. Something does come to an end, and it is in that ending that the beginning is also occurring. So that rock bottom is kind of like the end that is referred to in a lot of addiction counseling or programs or things like that. It's cool. Analogies are really cool to use to conceptualize things. Fun way of speaking about things.
Yeah, I enjoy it a lot. The metaphor of the seed and the plant and the tree and the fruit and the flower and the seeds within the fruit, that whole thing is universal, and I view many things through that lens.
So tell me, like, I'm curious because I love this question, and I've asked this to many, many people, and I don't always get the kind of answer that I was hoping for. And I think that I actually feel today that I could ask you this question and you'll understand what I'm trying to ask. So the question is, what's it like to be you? What is it like to be you, you know, in this life, on this planet? What is it like from your, the expression that you are? What is that like? Whether that's in your mind, in your heart space, I don't know, your intuition, your energy, whatever it is that you view as yourself, what is that like?
That's a great question. First words that come to me is, it's great to be here. And when I say that, I mean that in the full sense of those words. It's not just like a passing phrase. It's great to be here. But that's, that could be the whole story, but there's things within that that you might feel like aren't so great, and I feel like those are also necessary. to speak of when answering this question, honestly. I feel very blessed, and I do feel that I live a beautiful life, and there's a lot of love in it, and adventure. And I've been through a lot to get here. But yeah, the other thing I thought of when you were asking me this question is, I think of my mission, you know, like the dream that I have for, you know, living beautifully all that I am. Mm. And kind of being at that, on that edge between leaning into that and leaning out of it, or not leaning into it every day, you know, and navigating that and the feelings around it, you know, how does it feel when I'm, you know, truly honoring that calling, and how does life respond to me, when I'm in that flow, and how wonderful is that? And then what are the feelings I have around not living into that? And like the I guess fear or shame and I have this that like edge between the two.
Yeah.
What could be contextualized as like becoming who you truly are, or like incarnating the true self, and I'm always conscious of that, and it's a blessing, because it's like this great light that calls me forth, but it's also like this intense fire that can burn me in certain ways when I'm not wielding it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I could speak more to that question, but if you want to share a reflection.
That was awesome. That was so, so cool. I was just going to say that fire, I think for me, something that I've been working through and growing from is certainly, you know, I can definitely resonate with that analogy of living on that edge and leaning into, you know, the true form expression
go ahead. I was just remembered of one of the poetries that I shared again recently. It's that kindle the internal flame, let it burn away all that you are not, until only you remain.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was about to say. I wasn't going to recite the poem, but what I was going to say was, in that process and that leaning in, the form that gives energy or feeds energy into not leaning into that fully is a fear that this fire will burn everything away. And you know, the truth is, at least my truth is, it will burn all of that away. It will burn all of it away until only the truth remains, or only you remain. So I think that there's that fear at play of you know, being afraid that when that fire burns all of that away, it might also burn me away along with it. So I think like maybe that's, and this is we can definitely talk about ego. I'd love to hear your thoughts about that. For me, the word ego has always been sort of a vague thing that people use, and I'm not always sure what people mean by it. It seems to me everybody uses it in a different way. But it, one way of using that word would be, in this case, the ego, My ego is afraid that that fire will annihilate me. It will annihilate my ego. And so it's saying, hey, you know, don't lean into this too much, because this is an eternal flame, and it's the kind of flame that will do away with anything that is not its natural expression or an expression that's true to it. So that's how I kind of view the ego. It's funny that you brought up that poem, because that's exactly what I was thinking of, is, you know, it's the burning away of everything and only you remain.
Mm-hmm. The ego. I guess we could just echo the metaphor of the unconscious and the conscious self.
Mm.
And the ego would be the self as created by life from a foundation of unconsciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And then through death and rebirth, we come into awareness of our eternity. And ideally, it looks mm-hmm. differently with different, you know, nuances and permutations to a greater or lesser degree of that manifesting. Because the cycle will continue to repeat as we go deeper and deeper into that.
Mm-hmm.
The wisdom of our eternity is like the ideal or the epitome of it. And that's my intention when I refer to it using those words.
Mm-hmm.
The ideal of what we can come to know
mm-hmm.
through our death and rebirth. And so yeah, the ego sensing that annihilation, it's a true perception, but it's incomplete also, because the circle continues, the cycle continues. So there will be a rebirth, and
exactly
the ego through that death and rebirth will become what it truly is. And I've always found that from that rebirth emerges innocence. Right, so the child is a metaphor for that, you know, original innocence that is the first emergence from source before mm-hmm. splitting into two and becoming divided, and then taking the journey into multiplicity and different forms of corruption, which are just all the different components of the equation that will resolve into one again
mm-hmm.
to then return to connection with the source or zero.
Yeah.
It's an ebb and a flow. And so the ego, you know, like when we look at it, there's all these judgments around it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like I spoke of addiction, how there's these different judgments that we have around it so that we can create a separation from ourselves in it to establish our foundation as separate from it, and viewing it as the enemy is essentially what that looks like. But in order to reconcile, we have to be able to heal our relationship with these things. And so ultimately we have to be able to see their innocence. And that's something I think that happens with ego as well. It's necessary. And ego I've viewed as its ideal role is that of a servant, but more like a devotee, you know, like one who is devoted to serving its beloved, which is the divine or our true self. And so it's like a vessel for spirit to incarnate itself through. And you know, you need a powerful vehicle to travel, right? So, but if the power is built with a lack of consciousness, then the structure will be out of integrity and it will naturally come to a breakdown. And so this is having that unconscious foundation, being more so created by life, our ego's built up in ways that are not imbued with, you know, our conscious creative intent. So they're not in alignment with the truth or our true self. So they become destroyed. And then through that, they become reborn. And then now having the foundation of consciousness, we can consciously create with life. So it's like we're in a co-creative process. Having come to know what we are through death and then rebirth, we can then begin to create who we are. But in reflection of that truth, which we have come to know that we are. And so the consciously created ego is, because we still have to adopt identifications to be able to define what we are so that we can then use that to connect in a powerful way with that within the world that is looking to connect with that, right?
Mm-hmm. To embody it, right? And connect to the best, most effective forms of expression that make sense for each of us. So, for example, poetry for you, that's one of those forms of expression, and doing the work that's necessary on the physical level to build that connection and keep that connection line strong and effective in order for that expression and that energy to flow through to this medium, so that you are creating consciously and you are using ego in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the ego is fulfilled. You know, it does receive joy from serving truth and serving spirit. Mm-hmm. Serving its creator, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that joy is a beautiful thing, right? So it's not like, oh, I'm enjoying this in an egoic sense. It's like, no, you from the perspective of your eternity, you can witness the ego like an innocent child that just wants to dream and experience the things that it loves.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it might make mistakes, but you can have compassion for that and understanding and hold loving space for it and guide it into correction and watch it bloom and become the beautiful thing that you know that it is, because you're in that perspective of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were to, let's say, not give it that love, what would it become? Right?
Right.
So yeah. If the child is acting in a sense in error or in ignorance, would you just turn away entirely and starve it from love, or would you want to give it your love and intention? And I think it's the same for the ego, and it's a skill that I feel is one of the most essential skills for developing self mastery, or self love even, is to be able to hold two points of consciousness at once.
Mm-hmm.
To be unified in that sense, and the two that I almost often looked at is the eternal consciousness and the innocence, which is like that essence within all the facets of my consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
That surround that eternity. So the ego would be like one identification, or just the innocence itself. It's like I look at that as the thread that weaves through all of the different ways that I express myself or have been, and I see their essential innocence, and I witness that and remember that from the foundation that is my eternity. And through that, I am able to heal my relationship to all these parts of myself, and allow them to
go ahead,
fulfill
go ahead.
On the desire that they have, but with the guidance of the wisdom that is of my eternity, rather than not being able to do that because I am not able to be connected with them because I just judge them and view them as something to be repressed or
I was just gonna say if we zoom out for a moment and picture sort of a wall and then maybe a screen on the wall, and then you've got some film that's moving, that's playing, and you've got a series of images going from one side to the other. And if we picture that we are on that screen now, and we are a series of images, and we're speaking on these various perspectives and philosophies and way of being and way of living, when we zoom out and look at it, we can acknowledge that what we are, these perspectives that inform our life and our being, don't necessarily have to be the objective, absolute reality of things. What they are, however, and we can know that with certainty, a lot of certainty, enough certainty, is that they are effective philosophies. They are effective philosophies. They are effective perspectives. And we know their effectiveness in the results that we witness and the experiences that come from them. We know, if we go back to the analogy of the seed, we know that these philosophies are effective for us because, we are that seed that broke open and is now growing in the light and growing in this new environment with the sun shining on it and able to see the sun and able to see everything around it and able to grow and move through that mystery. And it's a beautiful thing. So I just wanted to zoom out for a moment and do that. And then one of the things that I started thinking about as you were speaking was, If we zoom out and look at things from the level of planet, and we look at everything contained within that as very specific individuated expressions of the natural course of things, then the that process of the seed breaking and growing through the ground and out into its new environment, that's a process that we I'm distracted by your car. That's a process.
Sorry, I just
it's all good. That's a process that is happening and has happened and continues to happen for all things within this planet. And it is by taking on that journey ourselves that we are aligning ourselves with that. We are essentially expressing the natural course of ourselves within that construct of the planet. And by doing so, on the planet, on the level of planet, of looking at it as a collective, that change from the unconscious foundation to the conscious foundation is occurring on that collective level as well. And that's what, that's kind of what I see. The individual progression is a reflection of. It's a reflection of the collective progression also occurring. It is an indicator that, you know, the natural course of that progression on the planetary level is occurring. And the creative conscious energy that we are bearing witness to is evidence of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's something that everything must go through. It is the way. Nature speaks it most eloquently. And through that we can come to know it in all things.
Yeah.
I had to start my car because this is my my studio, I guess, for the day, for the podcast. I'm traveling around. I'm a nomad for the month or so. I do this every few years. Get rid of a lot of my things and just travel. And so today I felt that this was the best place that I had for sound. But then I realized I parked on the street where there's lots of cars passing, so people may have heard that. And then I needed to plug my laptop in to the power source here so that we didn't get disconnected. So, yeah, those are
that's awesome.
I'm just thinking of it in the metaphor of everything that we're saying, and I'm sure there's some synchronicity around it.
There totally is. So you travel every few years. You kind of stop and take a couple months to travel.
I've been saying that recently because I realized that that's a thing that I do, and I kind of uproot myself from wherever I've been living for a while, and I, you know, reduce to simplicity. I clear out a lot of my possessions so that I can travel lighter, and then I just move around and connect with, I guess, new experiences through that, and also immerse myself within the mystery by stepping out from the known into the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And through that, I always seem to find myself ending up at a place more beautiful than I had anticipated possible. Mm-hmm. So I sense that's on the other end of this wave. Yet how it manifests, whether it's a place or an experience or who knows. But that's been something that I've come to understand, is that when you take that journey into the unknown, the treasure is awaiting you. And you won't find it unless you go for it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. That's so cool. I think that's so cool. And I think that I personally feel that that makes sense to do that every once in a while. It's a great way to surrender to that mystery, to surrender to the process of, well, maybe surrender is not the right word. I'm thinking more, you know, that mystery is part of this experience that we call the human life. It's part of it already. It's embedded into it. And we can create circumstances and experiences for ourselves that convince us that that mystery is no longer there, or that it is in some way minimized. But by taking steps like what you're doing, that's returning to that reminder that it is actually the natural, you know, essence of life, and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. is a lot of storytelling.
Yeah, that's one of the fundamental ones. I think it's probably the biggest piece, is the mystery, the unknown, and how do we relate to that? Because then we project all our unconscious fears onto that, because, well, we don't know what's there, right? So it could be a threat. And so in order to mitigate that, we have to keep it at bay, right? We have to make it an enemy. We have to, or we try to say that we know that we've solved that problem, we've mm-hmm. figured it out, and not until we can truly open to it, that it is a mystery, and that we don't know, can we begin to be at peace. I've spoken about the unknown and the mystery being like the source of the greatest fear, right? Like that's what we fear most is the unknown, but also the trust that we can have in the unknown mm-hmm. is the most powerful trust that there can be.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like a trust without opposite. It's a trust not in things that are temporal and that can be proven, but in something unprovable. So it's like faith. It's like it reaches to the divine, because mm-hmm. trust is, it's like the integrity or lifeblood of love. And so in order to know the greatest love, you have to have the greatest trust. So if the greatest trust is in the unknown, then only through that can you come to know the greatest love, which is like being open fully to life and not closed off from. Like if we were to follow the thread of multiplicity towards simplicity within anything and come to know its essence, you might be you might say that's like from, you know, the many into the one, right? Mm-hmm. The different ideas around what it could be, but then you come to know like what is the essential thread that moves through all of that. But then the zero, the source that one emerges from, that's like the mystery. So it's an even deeper layer than the innocence is the mystery. And that's the most liberating place to be able to unite with. And I've said before that knowledge cannot contain the infinity of love. Nothing beholds the infinity of love. Source, your foundation in nothingness. Live in love with mystery. And through having that loving relationship with the mystery in all things, you can come to know the deepest secrets of life. So it's a paradox. It's like you've surrendered to not knowing, and through that you can come to truly know.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not cut off from that deepest source of revelation, right? So I've said before also that the knowledge of nothingness is a limitless source of wisdom.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm speechless. I am speechless because your journey, your expression, you've been able to embody things that are very difficult to describe and conceptualize, and to put the right words together. And that's a really, really beautiful thing. I truly think it's a beautiful thing. And I have to just repeat what you said. One of the things was the greatest trust is in the unknown, and the greatest love is in that greatest trust, or something like that. That is just beautiful. And everything else that followed that was also beautiful. I'm so grateful that you decided to come on and do this episode with me. I'm so grateful that your journey unfolded in the way that it had, in order to facilitate you expressing and doing this work of expressing these things into words that can be shared, words that can add to my vocabulary I can definitely speak for myself, add to my vocabulary and add to my mind's ability to conceptualize and form these things and interpret them into language. That's a really, really beautiful thing. It's a gift. And yeah, I just want to say thank you for being a living, breathing, embodied reminder of the gift of this life and what it looks like for the gifts in everything to be actively expressing and actively coming into fruition, actively taking its natural course. And the word natural course, that's something I use very often with myself and in my own meditation. So there's so much resonance and a lot of gratitude and love. So I just wanted to say thank you. It's wonderful to have you on this planet.
Wow. Yeah, I was just had the biggest smile hearing you say all that. I was like riding a wave.
So glad.
The reminder. Mm-hmm. I'll just say one of my favorite things to say to that. All that is needed is to remember that everything is a reminder.
Yes. Absolutely.
And yeah, it's great to be here. Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me on the show, for sure.
My pleasure. You can come back anytime. Yeah. And if you're ever in the same geographical region, my doors are always open. Yeah, it's been beautiful. It's been fun. I hope you, wherever you are, I hope you're moving along.
Thank you. Yeah, I am. It's going well so far. It looks like it'll continue as long as I keep at it.
Right on. Right on. Well, thank you so much, on Finitree. I look forward to the next time. And wishing you. Is the sun shining where you are?
Yeah, that's actually how I ended up parking on this street, because there was some sunlight. So
amazing. Well,
it was a trade off. I'm not sure if it was worth it, but we'll have to see.
It was. I think it was worth it. No audio issues here.
Okay. Hopefully the sound came through, or the sunlight came through the sound.
Yes, I think it probably did. I wish that the sun follows you around all day long, like a friend that just wants to play with you.
Thank you. You too.
My pleasure. Okay. Ah, thank you, thank you, thank you. That was episode 6, third intuitive session. I hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. I hope you come back. Do please share any feedback you have. Share if any of this resonates. Share anything you want or don't. Just know that this is an act of love. It's an expression of love, and it's a beautiful thing, and I'm so happy to be doing it, and so happy to have people with me on this journey that are happy to be doing this and expressing this beautiful act of love with me. It truly is such a beautiful thing. All right, until next time.